Well, welcome back to the XR Industry Leaders Podcast. My name is Brad Scoggin. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Arbor XR, and I'll be your host today along with my co-host, Will Stackable, also a co-founder and our CMO. And today we get to sit down with Energy Safety Canada. The energy sector is a huge economic driver in Canada, and they're facing a job shortage in the coming decade. And Energy Safety Canada is using VR to help address that challenge, and they've been doing it for a long time. Today we have Lisa Polio and Kelly Johnson, two of the program managers on the show. Thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Maybe start with, we have an international audience, and a lot of people don't know this actually, but a big chunk of our team is in Canada. But most people probably are not familiar with Energy Safety Canada. So maybe tell us a little bit about what you do as an organization.
Sure. So Energy Safety Canada is a non-for-profit organization, primarily known for doing safety training across the energy industry and across the whole country. So that's our main driver is getting people trained to do courses so they can get tickets to work out in the industry. Kelly and I specifically work with the Careers in Energy team. So we are just a division that more focuses on the messaging and getting the word out about the career opportunities that exist in the energy sector as a whole, because it's really quite diverse and growing. And as you mentioned, a really large driver of jobs in the Canadian job industry. So that's kind of Energy Safety Canada and the team that we work on. And in terms of, I guess, our VR involvement, we kind of started, like you said, we've been doing it for a while, but we started our VR experiences back in 2019, and we currently have 4 different experiences that we offer to the industry. So we have Experience the Energy Take the Tour, which is our live 360-degree videos of work sites. So users put on the headset, and they are right on a drilling rig, they're in the oil sands, they're in a processing plant, they get to see the workers, they get a 360-degree view, and they can click on little icons to learn more about what they're seeing and what that actual job is, again, driving people to a career. And then we have some animated experiences which have been really awesome to be able to develop show these new emerging sectors. And we also have some games that really attract our youth so they can get a chance to see some simulated, loosely related roles that they could do that kind of gives them an outcome that relates to the industry.
Yeah, you have a very interesting use case. You have a job shortage coming, and you're trying to, I guess it sounds like, bring more exposure to the energy sector to upcoming students so they'll be interested in the field. I'm curious, what is it like when the students put on the headset? How are you getting this content in front of them? And maybe even a kind of a follow on there, or as part of that, how familiar are students with the energy sector? I mean, is this, when they put on a headset, are they like, wow, this is something I didn't even realize? I mean, talk us through that a little bit.
I can take that, Lisa. So the students are always excited. So we can go as young as grade 3. And we do have actually some old 2019 technology. We have some GOES still in our portfolio of headsets that we roll out and that we use. And those are really great when we're working with the younger students. In Alberta, I have to say most students who have lived in Alberta or born and raised in Alberta are familiar with the oil and gas or the energy sector in some form, because almost everybody's family has somebody in it. working in it. So the students are aware of it, but it's great because especially the younger kids, we have this one experience where you're in the oil sands and a mining truck and a big dump truck, huge mining truck is backing up, and it's like the truck is backing right up towards where you're standing in the 360 video. And, you know, the kids squeal or, oh my gosh, it's going to hit me, right? So yeah, it's really fun to see the youth. We've established really good relationships with schools in Western Canada, Saskatchewan, and Alberta mainly. And with that, the demand, I mean, that alone keeps our headsets. So we do a virtual field trip is what we call it, where we send out kits of headsets to schools for teachers to either work into their curriculum or have a day where they're going to bring them out and the students can engage with them. So we provide a little bit of a PowerPoint or a presentation where we walk them through what the energy sector is, did you knows, you know, bringing that awareness, as you said, Brad, to why it's an important economic driver for the country. And then we go into, did you know that there's all these career options? Because I think that there might be preconceived notions of what the energy sector looks like and what the jobs are. And really, it's more than just, you know, being a roughneck out on a drill. There's tons of occupations. And in fact, our organization, Careers in Energy, we profile over 81 occupations within the industry. And they're all in demand. They're all going to face a labor shortage at some point in the next, you know, decade.
Well, I see in the notes too, it looks like energy jobs pay over 2 times more in Canada than the standard. I mean, that's a good incentive that just, you know,
yeah, that's the driver we try and let kids, youth, everyone know. Yeah, they're kind of, I guess we're trying to help dispel some of the myths that exist in the industry that, you know, it definitely can have its ups and downs over history, but with such a diverse, I guess, mix and blend of all different kinds of energy sources, you can pivot from one area to another as new emerging technologies come up. And there's a ton of transferable skills. So we're really trying to get that messaging out that you can, you know, upskill, reskill. You can, if you've worked in one sector, you can easily pivot to another and just bring that knowledge. And that just helps strengthen the workforce as a whole. So yeah, we try and again, young kids don't necessarily think about where money comes from and who's paying for it. But we definitely know if we go to post-secondary institutions and, you know, people actually really thinking about that career, knowing that they could get debt paid off faster and there's a lot of opportunities. It can definitely help attract the workforce.
Yeah. Will and I grew up in Oklahoma. So we grew up, you know, kids like that who are very familiar with the energy sector. But it is interesting, or it may be, you know, kind of cool to see that. I think probably when we were kids, well, it was the oil field. But today, yeah, energy sector is so much more and it's broadened so much. It's also funny living in Southern California now, where in Oklahoma, if you want a professional path, it's energy, doctor, or attorney. That's kind of your path, you know. And then SoCal, it's like a whole different, you know. I'd be interested, I think our listeners too, you talked about the content. Where do you get content? You've been doing this for a long time. Has your content strategy evolved? What does that look like today?
Sure. Yeah, I can probably tell you how we started. So we kind of, with our live experiences, we picked sort of the eight at the time in 2019, the eight major types of industries. So like Kelly mentioned, the drilling rig, the oil sands, processing, SAGD, kind of telling the whole story of all the different ways we get energy out. So it actually worked great. We did initially have some federal government funding. Our team often works on that model. So we apply for a specific project. We put this VR in the project, so we get that budget for it. So we, again, being Energy Safety Canada and having that presence in the industry, we just turn to a lot of the major companies that we work with on different projects as an organization and kind of sold it as, hey, this is a tool you can use. So if you let us onto your site, we'll bring our crew, we will highlight the area. Again, being a safety organization, we had utmost importance to make sure everything got filmed was safe, accurate, and demonstrating the company in the best light possible, because you can't really edit anything out of 360-degree video because it's taken everything in. So, so basically, they would let us onto site for free. I myself went to all the locations to film because I have the safety background. I went with our digital media company. We picked the main areas. We try and be, again, we didn't want to waste time. Like, they're very busy sites. So we just come in and kind of take a fly on the wall approach. Like, again, a lot of these very, these workers who work in the field, they notice a camera crew coming to site. So we're like, act normal, you know, just keep on doing your activities. We captured what we needed. We would send it. We worked on the storyboards, made sure we were telling what they wanted to tell about their industry, the highlights. And we really, had a great process, worked together. Everyone had to approve and sign off and be happy with what we were promoting. And then they had this tool, and that's actually been a really interesting, I guess, thing we didn't expect or learn, those companies became our biggest proponent because now they could say, hey, look at our work site. And a lot of times, like in Alberta, a lot of the work sites are in remote areas. And then the main head offices are often in Calgary or Edmonton. So a lot of their own staff don't even know what it looks like on site because they can't afford to get everyone out there, or that they don't work, they don't have the training, they don't have the orientation to be on site. So they found it as an awesome tool that they could use internally as well to just show the work they do. So yeah, it ended up no cost to them, no charge for us, but they all ended up with a product they could use in the end. And even now, like in 2024, we still have them reach out. Are you guys doing any more projects? Can you film a new area? We're trying to break into carbon capture, or we are, you know, moving into biofuels. If you are doing any more, we'd love to showcase what we're doing. So yeah, it's actually ended up being a really good way.
It's really interesting. A lot of organizations, when they get started in VR, they want to, you know, understand what use cases are going to be most effective. And, you know, going back, you have, you know, 100 plus headsets spread out throughout Canada. But going back, how did you decide this specific use case? You know, when I first saw just the title, Energy Safety Canada, I was thinking, oh, great, we're going to be learning about VR training for energy safety. And so it's interesting that you narrowed in on this specific use case. And I know it's related to the job shortage, but talk a little bit about, as you started this process looking at VR and wanting to build out an initial pilot program, how did you land on this use case? And maybe talk a little bit about the conversations you had, because oftentimes there's a tension between your team, whoever's creating the content, and the industry to work together to figure out where do we start with VR, because companies, there's a whole bunch of different types of use cases that they could land on. So what was that conversation like?
Yeah, I think it was one of our colleagues, like, who was on my team at the time, who had seen VR somewhere at an event we went to. So again, it was really new. And as I mentioned, with that grant process, we often just throw any ideas to the wall. And it's kind of like, as an organization, we take the approach of like, this is our chance to test run something because it is the grant money, right? So we can try anything out. It's less risky in terms of getting Energy Safety Canada and everyone behind it, because we're saying, hey, we're testing it out on this project and we're going to see how we like it. So it has been handy that we do have a really good foundation with a presence in the industry. So we were able to say to these companies, hey, we're giving it a try, and we really think this is the opportunities we could see, but they trust us from being in the industry as long as we have to kind of give that test run. So it was interesting meeting with companies, because I was not even very familiar with it myself, but I was the program manager on the project. So trying to explain it, and kind of, again, meeting with our media company when we landed on one to work with, they kind of showed us a lot of the opportunities. So it was just about getting out in front of them and explaining how this could be great. And there's so much potential, to kind of trust us. And thankfully they did. And then just getting, once we had one done, like we did a full test run. So that first project had 8, we did a full test run all the way through for one site for drilling. So once we had drilling done, it was a no brainer. I would take the headset to any company and say, see this, put it on. And we can do this at your organization, wherever you want, whatever you want to showcase. And then the next 7 was like easy breezy once they tangibly saw that product. So it was awesome. And it spoke for itself. And it really continues to, like, once we can show what we've done, we've never had anyone turn us down when we've approached them. And we're actually turning down companies to say, no, we've already showcased that, or we ran out of budget. We only said we'd do 4 in this next round, so we don't have enough budget. So yeah, it's been a huge, and I guess the next piece of that, like Kelly mentioned, kind of opportunities moving forward, like we can use that within Energy Safety Canada to show them that this can be some other stuff we can do in the VR space.
Yeah, that's really good. I want to transition to talking about challenges and lessons learned. Your team has been working in VR for quite a while, and I know there's been some bumps along the road. So talk a little bit, let's start with, what are some of the biggest challenges you faced, maybe Kelly? And what could you share in terms of lessons learned?
So I think, as Lisa mentioned, you know, our model that we work on is grant-based. So our projects are funded from grants, usually on the government side, either provincial or federal level grants. They're cyclical. They come and go. We're kind of at the mercy of when there's a call. So I feel like we get a grant and we get a project going. And so we just wrapped a project in March of this year where we, you know, we're able to develop more experiences for our VR headsets. And then the project ends and the money dries up and then you wait for your next. So I think one of the biggest challenges is the momentum, keeping the momentum going and then being able to stay current because technology is changing at such a rapid pace. Yes, we've been in the game since 2019, but you know, it's you get an idea, you start running with it, and by the time the funding comes in, and as much as the funding is, you know, yours to use, there's still parameters with which in you much you have to work with it, right? So for example, our last project was about a sustainable future, sustainable jobs, green jobs sort of idea, and so we had to, that's why we looked at carbon capture and liquefied natural gas and hydrogen and those emerging sectors within the industry. So we are kind of challenged in where we can, which direction that we could go, but not that we can't overcome them. So we're always brainstorming. Like Lisa said, the positive side of that is that it's always a test pilot. So we can throw ideas at the wall. We can put something out there and try it. And if it's successful or if it's not so successful, it's okay. We tried it. We tested it. We know what worked and what didn't work for moving forward. So earlier we talked about youth. We actually find that newcomers or immigrants to Canada are an excellent audience when it comes to our headsets. And this was something that in previous projects was not even on the radar. So there was some funding from an organization called the Future Skills Center. And, you know, they put it towards new workers and transitioning workers. And they really thought that, you know, Canadian adults would be the ones that would be engaged with this program, with the headsets. And in fact, they weren't. And even the youth weren't as excited as they thought in this project. And it was the immigrants that really came through who were willing to put the headsets on, willing to spend the time in the experiences and willing to learn. So that's really exciting. And like, I think there's an opportunity there in future projects to build that out. Also with the amount of data, and we know data is king, I think there's opportunities there where we can incorporate live labor market data into our headsets into a way where maybe, you know, somebody's at a conference or a job fair and they're on a drilling rig in the headset and the numbers can be popping up locally to say, oh, you're in Grand Prairie, Alberta. Did you know there's this many job openings for rig hands or derrick hands, right? So I think, yeah. I think the opportunities are really awesome. So we're excited. So funders, if you're listening, we're always open for funding.
No funders are listening to this podcast. No. It's just,
let's be honest with ourselves. Yeah.
Just other thirsty XR programs. You know, I want to, so you talked kind of high level, some of the strategic. I want to zoom into the everyday, actually getting headsets on students. Obviously, you're using Arbor to manage those devices, but talk a little bit about over the last, you know, few years, what you've learned about the realities and the practicalities of having headsets spread out throughout schools and some of the lessons learned there.
Do you want me to take that one, Kelly?
Yeah, you can start, Lisa, and I'll jump in. Yep.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time. It is time consuming. We're a small team, but the energy it takes to properly get them, you know, updated, charged, cleaned, packed up and shipped, like you did mention, we have over 100 headsets in our kits, and we are shipping them across Canada to primarily schools, but also other organizations. So there's a lot of logistics involved. Then when they get to the user on the other end, there's varying degrees of VR knowledge and know-how. So we are trying to troubleshoot because if we, again, spent the time and energy to get them out, we really want them to get the maximum experience, right? So we've tried to think of different ways. We've recorded videos to give teachers a walkthrough and, you know, make give them as many tips as they can so they can properly use them. So I think that it can be time consuming. So we try and really encourage, like if we're sending it to a school, try and get it as to as many students as you can in that school, not just one teacher, one class, and then ship it back. Just trying to maximize, I guess, we've learned, but it still has a person component that can't go away as much as we go through the technology. So yeah, I think that's been a learning for us.
I have to mention you should go, but I do want to hear a little bit. Rumor has it you're still using Oculus Go's, which blows my mind, and that some of these Oculus Go's have been in the field for years now. Maybe somebody talk a little bit about that, but I want more lessons learned would be great here.
Yeah, I just want to go back. So, you know, in the last, 2 years, we brought Arbor XR on board. And I have to say, having a program that helps us manage our headsets, now we can lock out Meta. So one of the issues that we dealt with students would, you know, exit out of the experiences and they were in the Meta lounge, they would figure out how to get onto the school's internet and suddenly they're riding a roller coaster and not on a, you know, an oil rig or a mining site in Northern Alberta. And then they would lock us out, right? So that we we're not the most technical team. So that was an issue. So having management device, you know, software has been a real game changer that way because we can put them in the Arbor Lounge. They only have access to the 3 or 4 or 5 experiences that we have, and away they go, right? So we're really excited to be able to use that. Also, the ability to upload updates, to upload new experiences using, Arbor. Again, I'm tooting you guys' horn here, but it's just made our lives so much easier because we can plug the headsets in, we can hit the button, and it just happens. Where before, you don't want to know. Like with Meta, we were using one account, and it was one headset at a time sort of thing. And with 100 headsets, it's just not feasible. So that's been a real game changer.
The original goes was like me at the beginning and then eventually passing it off to someone else, but like charging all of them up, like taking a room at the office, having extension cords. Now we've got like a suite cabinet that's all charged and we can put them all at once. They have a spot. We can wheel it in and out. Like it definitely has progressed, but the goes, changing the controller batteries, testing everyone, not wanting them to get, and like Kelly said, spending time wiping out all the experiences that kids added on their own liberty and totally unaware. One that I was most amused with was loo with a view. It was bathroom seat. Like you're sitting in a loo somewhere in some part of the world. So sometimes I learn I'm not much of a, and like Kelly mentioned, our team is actually like not gamers, not in the VR space, but we have an uncanny ability to find the problems because we would break things like the media company would be like, oh no, it works this way. And we'd come in and we're like, we can't find anything. So they actually appreciated our inexperience in VR because we would find a way. So that was an interesting learning along the way. I've now obviously learned a lot more of it in the last 6 years working with it, but yeah, it's been interesting.
If you're an IT manager listening, just cover your ears when you hear that they sent out headsets without kiosk mode and students were installing whatever they wanted.
Hey, but you know, that's how the whole VR world has started though. If also IT closures, again, if we were dependent on IT's approval, there would be no VR anywhere right now. Right? We got to break the rules for a few minutes and then
had to be a trailblazer in your own right.
Yeah. It is funny that, as interesting as, doing a virtual tour in the energy sector might be, a roller coaster or loo with a view, it's probably still a little more fun for a kid.
Yeah, depends on your audience. Yeah. But actually, that's interesting that you say too, because the students are often, like a lot of kids by now, have headsets at home as well. So they can show the teachers. So even though we try and put a lot of effort into troubleshooting and explaining and giving, you know, cues and keys and guidelines and whatever, the kids will often like figure it out right away. So we do end up relying on that a fair amount as well.
And even those kids, it's been interesting because in the schools, like we go to high schools, and I mean, that's a tough crowd to walk into a room of, 16 and 17 year olds who have you know, way better things to be doing than listening to a bunch of women talk about the oil and gas industry. But, you know, once they get those headsets on, it's amazing to see the engagement and, you know, they let their guard down and they really get into it. And I think that's really cool. And at least, I don't know if you can talk to this, but like the gamification that we were able to do with our experiences. So for example, in our latest project, there are no liquefied natural gas operations that are up and running that we could have gone to film live video. So we had to put that into an animated form. And so we have this little robot. He's kind of our mascot. His name's Apo. He leads the tour. We've built in some games to, you know, just as things are starting to get a little bit on the boredom, the tedium's setting in, we pop in a game and there's a game that's relevant to, you know, the LNG, whatever they're talking about, if it's supply chain or a process, and then you move on with your tour. So I think it's cool. So again, kind of that innovation piece that we're trying to keep up with, like the gamification, keeping things interesting. I mean, the youth especially, they want things in sound bites, right? Like I have three kids myself, and you can't talk to them for more than 30 seconds because that's what they're used to. They watch their For You videos, and it's like next, 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 right? So it's being able to get into those classrooms and make an impact that's really cool and rewarding. So
that is cool. I like that. And yeah, you're right. Sometimes it's maybe easier to just text your kids than talk to them, right? That's a sad statement. I can't believe I just said that. As we maybe kind of move towards a wrap here and think about the future, I think today you guys are reaching 3,000-ish students per year, which is not a small number. That's exciting. Like, what role do you see VR playing going forward and kind of even rebranding maybe how people think about the energy sector and making it, if you see, you know, I guess bringing more of a, helping people see it more of as a tech-driven field? How do you see VR playing a role in that?
Yeah, I think we kind of, like Kelly mentioned, we've profiled a lot of different roles. So when, again, with youth or new people trying to enter the industry, we kind of have the messaging that, like, if you're into, like, you like drones, you could work in energy. You like robotics, you can work in energy, right? So really trying to... Yeah, you like money? Exactly. Do you want to move out of your parents' basement before you're 30? Go in energy. So I think that just showing again, like trying to, like we were big on the messaging, retelling the story. So I think us talking about the different opportunities, but then when you can show them in a cool tech form of like, hey, you know, you can see these people working. And again, our experiences are so unique in the fact that we have all kinds of jobs in there. So you can see like, you know, someone doing the hard labor, someone in a control room with like 16 computer monitors testing a pipeline that's, you know, halfway across North America, right? So just, again, trying to really paint that picture. I think telling them about it is one thing, but when in a really quick, short soundbite, they can pop it on and visually see it, it's different. And even the fact with VR, like, again, I think we've done a good job of making our experiences interactive, but how it kind of tricks their senses in different ways. It's not just like watching it on a computer or a TV. Like a lot of our VR experiences, we have adapted onto a web-based version just to be able to get a larger audience because not everyone can have access to that VR headset. But all the time, we're always like, you can try it on the website, but it's way cooler when you put it on, right? So just really getting that immersive experience, I think gives such a unique perspective. And people that are a little uncomfortable to try, if you can convince them to give it a try, there's like always that wow factor, which I think is really cool. So yeah, I think that's one way that we can keep on building and growing in the VR space.
Well, you guys are true pioneers in the space, and that's something we really appreciate. I also know you're busy, so I appreciate you taking some time to spend with us today. So if people want to find you, a couple ways, I think LinkedIn, you're both on LinkedIn. There's also, we'll put a link in the show notes to where you can check out some of these experiences. And then you also have a podcast, Not Your Grandpa's Energy. Is that right? So check that out. But it's been great talking today, and we look forward to chatting again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. It was a great chat.
Yep, a lot of fun.
Well, it's always fun to sit down with true pioneers, and to be in an old school sector like energy and to be able to bring in this VR program and really, you know, kind of adjusting how the next generation thinks about the energy sector is really cool.
Yeah, it was a great interview. A little window into a world that I didn't even know existed. Also, it's amazing to me that they still have Oculus Go's out in the field and they're putting them on, you know, in classrooms, letting kids put them on. And it just goes to show that I miss my Oculus Go. I don't remember if you ever had one, but those are cool. They had the little controller and super lightweight. I remember taking out on plane one time and the stewardess came by and tapped my shoulder and I took it off. And she said, "Hey, the pilot wants to try it."
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That's yeah. Anyways, that was back when VR was still so new that most people hadn't seen it. But yeah, great interview. Be sure to check out their app and their YouTube channel and their podcast. They've got quite a bit going on. So great show.
Yep. And as always, we appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Make sure you check us out and we'll see you next time.